don't forget, we will have a special edition of Higher Praise tonight at 7 p.m. You don't want to miss it. You're going to enjoy it. I love you much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a Lord's Day, a great day on tomorrow. Give him the glory. Give him the praise. Give him the honor. He deserves it. God bless you. Until then, love you. Ah, and good night until the next appointed time.
Ancient mythology is based on the premise of divine-human interaction. Unfortunately, modern science has concluded that God becoming a man could never have happened since it's not reproducible in the laboratory. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen once. In fact, that is the core message of Christmas, that God became a man and dwelt among us. Christmas traditions are wonderful, but without being tied to the incarnation, God becoming a man in the person of Jesus Christ, Christmas is just a holiday rather than a holy day. God has only become a man once, but that's all it took for him to say, "I love you." This is David Jeremiah, and that is the Christmas story on Route 66.
Driving the word home this Christmas on Route 66. Log on to Route66Life.com and get your roadmap for life. Start your journey home today.
AM 570, WTBN Pinellas Park. AM 910, WTWD Plant City. Tampa Bay's Christian Talk, a service of Salem Communications.
Only available while supplies last, so don't wait. Diminish the appearance of brown spots on your face, neck, and hands. To find out how you can try a free 30-day supply of Night Skin for just shipping and handling, call 1-800-764-7498. That's 800-764-7498. This free offer won't last long, so call now. Call 1-800-764-7498. That's 800-764-7498.
A growing number of evangelical leaders are concerned about biblical illiteracy spreading in the Christian community. Pastor Bobby Grunewald was with LifeChurch.tv, maker of the popular Bible app YouVersion. He says studies indicate most people want to know more about Scripture.
The actual gap between that interest and their action is pretty large. You know, the number of people that actually spend any time in the Bible, whether it be once a month or even any time at all, is very low.
Grunewald says that the YouVersion and other Bible apps are a great way for people to increase their scriptural knowledge. He reports the YouVersion picked up another 11.3 million users just last month. Lawmakers in Kansas are considering legislation that would make it harder to obtain a partial birth abortion. State law currently allows women to have late-term abortions on the grounds that their mental health is at stake, but a new bill would stop that. Republican State Representative Steve Hubert is the sponsor of the legislation. This is SRN News. Former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty brought his national book tour to Washington this past week to talk about what he calls common sense solutions to the nation's problems.
Pawlenty was especially critical of a government running up trillion-dollar deficits.
Just because we followed Greece into democracy does not mean we need to follow it into bankruptcy.
Pawlenty says he's seriously considering a run for the White House in 2012, but hasn't yet made up his mind. Wally Hines, SRN News.
General Motors is expanding an earlier recall of some 2011 model year trucks and SUVs to fix a problem that could cause the vehicle's rear axles to lock. The Pittsburgh Steelers and the Baltimore Ravens are playing for the third time this season. The teams split the first two matchups, each winning by 3 points on the other's home field. This afternoon's game is being played in Pittsburgh. Later, the Green Bay Packers take on the Atlanta Falcons in Atlanta. Those two met once during the regular season. The Falcons won 20-17. More details at srnnews.com. I'm Gordon Griffin.
Now, Darwin or Design with Dr. Tom Woodward, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society. WTBN.
Wondered if you were alone in the universe? Did we get here by accident? Or are we the creation of an intelligent designer? Welcome to Darwin or Design, focusing on the continuing debate over intelligent design and Darwinism. What does science reveal, and what are the experts saying? Darwin or Design, sponsored by the C.S. Lewis Society and Trinity College of Florida. And now your host, the research professor of Bible and theology at Trinity College of Florida, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome to Darwin or Design, where we are tackling the big question of simulating evolution. Can a computer program attempt to do that? Or can you, from the other side, critique and find flaws in such simulations? Of course, it's always a joy to be able to team up with my tech director, Bill Carl. You have a very nice smile on your face today.
Oh, thanks. Yes. Feeling good.
Feeling good about the year 2011?
Oh, yeah, man.
It's going to be a great year. And speaking about a great year, I think it's going to be a great year for the critique of macroevolution, the notion of it being kind of the blind product of the laws of physics, the laws of chemistry, all those, you know, natural laws working through time, through chance, especially events, chance events, and then crafting the complexity of the life that we see around us and have in our own bodies. And we have with us today on the phone from Baylor University, Dr. Robert Marks, and he is an expert and a published author on a number of articles analyzing the computer simulations of evolution. I might just mention that if you want to follow the events that we're going to be talking about, the published articles and all the controversies, you can always log on to evolutionnews.org. That's evolutionnews.org. And just if you go down, scroll down, there's a little search box. And you can put in his name, Robert Marks, and pull up all the articles that have appeared about his work in that very important website. Of course, our own website is apologetics.org, apologetics.org. And we'll be, of course, featuring during the program a little bit of kind of news of new books and articles that have just come out recently that I've stumbled onto and I'm very excited about. Well, Dr. Robert Marks, a graduate. Dr. Marks, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? We want to thank you for joining us and sharing some of your research on this Darwin design question.
Well, thank you very much. As far as my background, let's see. I spent 26 years at the University of Washington in Seattle. After that, came to Baylor University when I learned that they wanted to do something kind of unique, which was to attempt to be a research university and also celebrate Christian worldview and the Lordship of Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's something I decided I wanted to dedicate the rest of my career to.
Tremendous. And so you came to Baylor then just within the last decade, about what, 5 or 6 years?
2003.
Yeah. 2003. And I knew that there was a move to develop Baylor from what it was already a good university, regional university, into a world leader in the area of integrating the best of scholarship with that slant or that understanding of the Lordship of Christ. And you have worked also, if I could just get it right out in the open very, very quickly, I think it's an exciting aspect of your research. You've worked closely with one of the pillars of intelligent design theory, Dr. Bill Dembski. Tell us a little bit about how you met Bill Dembski and something about your participating in cooperative projects.
Well, let's see. I first met Bill at a group of faculty that got together to study apologetics. It was put together by Dr. Walter Bradley, who's also one of the pillars. He wrote one of the first books in intelligent design,
sure,
Mystery of Life's Origins. And it turns out that Bill and I just began to resonate. He was interested in the area that I had been doing work in, and I was interested in apologetics and intelligent design, and we just kind of took off from there. We began to meet weekly and begin to resonate and do things, and it currently has resulted in, I believe, 5 or 6 peer-reviewed papers as a result of that collaboration.
Wow. Today we're talking to Dr. Robert Marks. He is a professor, distinguished professor of computer and electrical engineering in the Baylor University Department of Computer and Electrical Engineering, and that is in Baylor, Baylor University is in Waco, Texas?
In Waco, Texas, that's right.
How do you like living in Waco? Is it interesting?
It's just like Hawaii without the water.
How about that? I'm going to note that down. Next time I want to do a vacation and save some money, I'm going to Waco.
Absolutely.
And imagine the water. Dr. Marks, of course, has published, I'm looking at right in front of me here on the desk here at the radio station, a number of very important, as was just mentioned, peer-reviewed articles. I'm looking at one that was apparently published in the Proceedings of the 2009 IEEE International Conference on Systems, Man, and Cybernetics. What is cybernetics, if I can be so dumb at this point?
Cybernetics was actually a word coined by a professor called Norbert Wiener, who was probably the one of the founders of the area of artificial intelligence. And it just means artificial intelligence.
Okay. And that's what you have really spent your whole career working on and literally pioneering theorems and understandings and, I guess, the technical, practical side as well of computer engineering. Do I have that correct?
Well, I certainly have worked in the area of evolutionary computing and neural networks and fuzzy logic and swarm intelligence and all of the things which fall under the rubric of computational intelligence. We don't like to talk about artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence, as it was first proposed, has been basically a failure. And so that is artificial intelligence with the capital letters A and I. Mm-hmm. So in order to differentiate between artificial intelligence and some of the things which are going on now, we've referred to it as computational intelligence.
That's fascinating. I did not know that. I want to just jump right in and mention that Dr. Robert Marks, on the phone with us today from Baylor University, is the director of a whole research group. What is the name of your research group or your website or both?
Well, actually, I'm involved in a number of research groups, one in microwaves, one in something called timescales, but the one I think you're interested in is the Evolutionary Informatics Lab. And what we're doing there is looking at the information content of different algorithms.
Wow.
And seeing the information that is required to make the algorithms work. It does turn out in the creation of the world in physics, the physicists have spent a lot of time looking at things like time and matter and energy. But one of the things which really has not been explored to the extent that it should be is information. This is one of the concepts of intelligent design. When you see something designed, for example, you know that it's designed. There's information involved in what you're looking at, and you know it. But how do we quantify that, and how do we understand and measure the amount of information that is in something?
Wow. I'm dealing with these issues of information when I talk about DNA, for example. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but if the DNA molecule wound up in one human nucleus, so that is the core, you know, the carries, I guess, 95-98% of the DNA in a human cell, and that human nucleus will have a 3.1 billion nucleotide pair database, and you, through the tools and instruments of information theory, can you measure that? I mean, and mathematically measure that amount of information? Not necessarily that it's all being used, but at least you can measure that.
Well, certainly the DNA sort of sequence, if one does not look at how compressible it is you have 2 bits per nucleotide.
Okay. And so then you can actually mount up and compute the number of megabytes, for example.
Yes, you can. What we're interested in more, however, is the actual evolutionary process search and how the search is performed. One of the things that Bill Dembski did is wrote a book called No Free Lunch. That was written in response to a 1995 paper by a couple of NASA scientists, Wolpert and McCready, called No Free Lunch, which really astounded the evolutionary computing field. It said that with the lack of any knowledge about anything, that one search was as good as any other search. And that was, again, astonishing, because for years people had come up with their search algorithms and said, mine is the best, and they did some experiments on some benchmark problems and said, look, mine does better, and somebody else came out and said, no, mine does better. And what Wolpert and McCready said was that, my goodness, none of these algorithms work as well as any other one on the average if you have no idea what you're doing. And so the question is, and what we've done here is, if indeed that said is true and an algorithm works, then that means information has been added to the search. And what we've been able to do is take this baseline that all searches are the same,
mm-hmm.
and we've been able to, in cases where searches work, measure the information that is placed into the algorithm in bits.
Mm-hmm.
And we have looked at some of the evolutionary algorithms, and we found out that, strikingly, that they are not responsible for any creation of information.
Wow. Today we're talking to Dr. Robert Marks, and we're talking about algorithms. And if you're tuning in to Darwin or Design Today, and if you're not sure what an algorithm is, guess what? We're going to explain that in the next segment. Because, by the way, I conquered that little hill just a couple years ago because I had to look it up. And so I'm going to tell you about my discovery. And, of course, Dr. Robert Marks, professor, distinguished professor of computer and electrical engineering at Baylor University, will be able to do a much better job than I can ever of explaining in simple layman's terms what an algorithm is. We are analyzing the supposed success and finding out really about the flaws in evolutionary algorithms or evolutionary searches that seem to mimic what Darwinian theory says has happened. You're listening to Darwin or Design. I'm Tom Woodward, your host. We'll be right back after this break.
Darwin or Design is brought to you through the sponsorship of the C.S. Lewis Society. Since 1975, communicating the case for Christ and authentic Christianity to those in the academic world, both students and professors. To learn more about the C.S. Lewis Society and to access articles and resources mentioned during Darwin or Design, log on today to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. Darwin or Design is also sponsored by Trinity College of Florida. Located on the Gulf Coast, Trinity College has been known for over 75 years for the very best in Christian higher education. Named Best Buy in Private Colleges and Universities in the continental U.S. by Consumers Digest magazine, Trinity's preparation involves state-of-the-art classroom training, career advancement, and personal support. With alumni serving around the world, Trinity College of Florida is committed to impacting humanity. Experience the Trinity difference. Visit online at Trinity College.
Need to raise money, but you're tired of washing cars and having bake sales?
Not again.
Do what thousands of other Christian groups are doing. Go to SamaritanFundraising.com. At SamaritanFundraising.com, you'll learn how Christian groups are raising thousands of dollars fast. One Christian group recently raised more than $10,000. Fundraising is easy when people save money.
Thank you.
Visit SamaritanFundraising.com and put some real fun into your fundraising.
Woo-hoo-hoo!
SamaritanFundraising.com.
Bring heaven to earth.
Sunday mornings at 9, join us for The Hour of Glory and experience a life-changing message with evangelist Darren Earle.
Was this Jesus that he saw? Or was it a mighty angel? I'm not going to argue about it, but one thing I know for sure, he saw the glory of God.
Don't miss The Hour of Glory, Sunday mornings at 9 on AM 570 and 910 WTBN.
Welcome back to Darwin or Design, focusing on the debate between intelligent design and Darwinism, with your host, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Darwin or Design. It's been a real thrill to be able to get to know Dr. Bob Marks. Dr. Robert Marks II is a professor, and in fact, a very distinguished professor of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor University out in Waco, Texas, from where he is discussing some really exciting discoveries today as he is on the other end of the phone. Dr. Marks is, I think, if I can put it in personal terms, comparable to me, at least in one category. I'm sure he has a lot higher IQ, but we're born in the same year, 1950. Hello, fellow 50-er.
Well, hello.
How did it feel to pass the big 60, the 60 mark?
Well, as I mentioned, it hurts.
It hurts a little bit.
It does, yeah.
I have a gimp hip today. I don't know if that's because I'm in this 60 range, Bill. Don't laugh too hard. So
I'm going to take you guys out of the cafeteria for lunch, and you can get some some non-seasoned pureed.
Thank you. Yes. Well, I mean, I think my wife would say 1950 was a good year, and hopefully your friends and colleagues would say the same.
Yes.
Okay. But let's jump right back into the work that you're doing. You're in the thick of research, working with the informatics group?
Yes.
Okay. And if someone wants to visit that website, what is the web address?
It's evoinfo.org. E-V-O. evoinfo.org.
Okay, evoinfo.org. I'm writing that down on this sheet, and I've just visited it recently, and I think it's interesting that in the upper right-hand corner, if I can be a bit controversial here, in the upper right-hand corner of that website, it says something about studying how information evolves. In other words, the phraseology in the upper right-hand corner of the site sounds like you guys are really kind of confirming Darwinian theory. And I guess a more accurate perception that I'm getting is that you're trying to test Darwinian theory. Is that correct?
We are. You must remember that my background is in computer engineering. I'm not a biologist. Mm-hmm. However, in the area of biology, there have been a number of computer programs which have mm-hmm. been put forward, and they claim to be simulations of Darwinian evolution. And those we have studied and have found out remarkably that evolutionary algorithms based on Darwinian evolution do not by themselves have the ability to create information. Mm-hmm. Rather, they are tools which are mining information. And there are better ways to mine that information. That information is actually being placed in the algorithm to assure that the search is a success. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a pinball machine. When you do a pinball machine, the pinball comes down and bounces all around, but it always ends up going down the little hole behind the flippers.
Right.
And that's the way that many of these programs actually work.
Yeah.
They actually go through different paths, but they always end up at the same place. And guess what? They end up at the place where the computer program has decided that they should end up. And so everything is predetermined.
I'm looking at your webpage right now. We're talking today to Dr. Bob Marks. Dr. Robert Marks is a distinguished professor of computer and electrical engineering at Baylor University. And he is a world's leading authority on the testing of these algorithms, these mathematical models that seem to be, at least in a computer sense, trying to mimic or model what's going on out in nature. And I'm seeing the phrase here. It says investigating how information, and that's the key word, it's really jumps out graphically, investigating how information makes evolution possible. Now, when I read that, again, it sounds like you're saying evolution is possible, But evolution is made possible, if it is made possible at all, just by information that's fed in. Am I understanding correctly?
Yes. Let me explain to you what the basic concept of Darwinian evolution is. It's actually pretty simple. On a computer, we assume a number of answers to a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see how good each of these solutions are, maybe 100 different solutions. And each of these solutions is good to a certain extent. Then, just like with Darwinian evolution, we kill off the weakest, we take the strongest, and we repopulate with the ones that we have killed off. And then we mutate everything that is left. Sometimes there's something done which is called crossover, and crossover basically takes two solutions and kind of swaps pieces on it, but mm-hmm. Sometimes that's used, sometimes it isn't. But then once you have the mutated things, the next generation starts. You compute the fitness and how well these organisms are doing. You kill off the weak, repopulate, mutate again, and repeat this process. And our point is that it is not the evolutionary process that actually gives one success, even though it has been applied and applied successfully in a number of different areas. Rather, it is this fitness which one looks at which makes the algorithm work. And it's this fitness which is supplying the information. This is the hidden information which goes into the evolutionary algorithm that makes it work.
Mm.
And it's actually a source of information, and a source of information which we are mining. It's kind of like you have a coal reserve, and you want to mine that coal reserve. You have different tools which you can dig out that information with.
Mm-hmm.
You could use a tablespoon and kind of dig, or you could go get a backhoe or a shovel. And different algorithms have different ways of mining that coal, have different efficiencies. And it turns out the efficiency of the evolutionary algorithm in mining the information which is in the algorithm is relatively poor in the cases that we've looked at.
Hmm.
It's like using a tablespoon, if you will.
Well, today we're talking to Dr. Bob Marks. He is a professor of computer and electrical engineering at Baylor University and is on the cusp, the cutting edge, I guess is a way of putting it, of exploring and analyzing these simulations, these computer models that seek to simulate what's going on in the search for new information in the traditional Darwinian theory. You use the word algorithm, and I promised our listeners in the first segment that I would come back and kind of try to define that. And I'm going to give my quick and dirty definition, and then you can come along and chime in and correct me, okay? So here's my attempt. An algorithm, the way I understand it, is a step-by-step mathematical procedure. It's kind of like a formula, like 2x plus 3 would be a simple algorithm. Of course, most algorithms are more complex than that, but you take data and you manipulate it according to a certain procedure or plan step-by-step, and then you have some output. Now, is that within the ballpark, or at least three blocks?
I think it is within the ballpark. I would describe an algorithm more like a recipe.
Okay.
A recipe is a sequence of steps that one follows in order to bake a cake or whatever.
Okay.
And it's the same thing, for example, with search. Mm-hmm. You can do an evolutionary search. That's one sort of recipe to get the algorithm. You can you can do hundreds of different types of optimization algorithms in order to get the direct result.
Very good. Well, at least I was, again, in the same town, if not in the same ballpark. Let's talk about some of these specific algorithms that you and your colleagues have actually written up reports on. One of them is let's go back to Richard Dawkins, since he's kind of like everybody's favorite over-the-top atheist and kind of like a lightning rod?
Yes.
And he has said in his book, The Blind Watchmaker, which I read when it came out 20-some years ago, he said that you could actually do a search and come up with this phrase, methinks it is a weasel. Now, is that the name of his algorithm?
No, it isn't. It's just something that he chose. That's just a phrase out of Hamlet that he chose to illustrate it.
Okay. And I noticed it's probably not, it's the least, let's say, sophisticated, although perhaps the best known of these algorithms. And have you guys taken a look at that one?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the information that Dawkins places in the solution algorithm is actually enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has an idea of what he would like to do, and he places something called an oracle in the algorithm that makes it very easy to find a solution. Let me get back and illustrate the Dawkins thing with the no free lunch theorem.
Very good.
There is a movie called VHS.
VHF?
Yes.
Bill has seen it.
Actually, was it VHF or what? No, it was UHF.
Was it UHF?
It's UHF.
Okay.
Hilarious movie.
Very good. I'll put that on my list right now.
Okay, please do. Okay. There's one scene in there where you hear these voices going, is this it? And you hear, no. Is this it? No. Is this it? No.
Wow.
And the camera pans, and you see two guys in a park bench. One of them is obviously blind, and he is taking a Rubik's Cube, and he is performing an operation of turning the Rubik's Cube, showing it to the sighted person next to him, and asking, is this it?
Oh, my goodness.
And that's the way he's attempting to solve the Rubik's Cube problem.
You're kidding me.
And this is an illustration of something which is referred to as blind search.
Wow.
Really. Uh-huh. And according to the no free lunch theorem, astonishingly, any search without information about the problem that you're looking for will operate at the same level as blind search. And that's it's a mind-boggling result. Now, if we take Dawkins' result, and let's assume that we're looking at that through a blind search. In other words, you give me a string of characters, which is as long as me thinks it was like a weasel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 28 characters.
Mm-hmm.
And you use an alphabet of 27 corresponding to the English alphabet plus a space. It turns out that if you were to try to generate that using blind search, in other words, here's a bunch of letters. Yes, this is, no, this is not it. You give a bunch of more letters. No, this is not it. And repeat that process. The question is how many bits do you use up doing that? It turns out it's an astonishing 10 to the 42nd bits, and that's more than 800 million of our suns as measured in grams.
Wow.
So it's incredible, the implications of the no free lunch. Now, what Dawkins does is he basically says that I know the fitness. In other words, I can tell you in my algorithm whether I am getting warmer or not warmer. So if you're at an Easter egg hunt, somebody is telling you, yes, you're getting warmer, or no, you're getting colder, you can find the Easter egg more quickly. However, in the lack of any information, you're going to have a heck of a time finding the Easter egg if nobody's telling you which way to go.
Well, that offers us a new insight on Dawkins' supposed modeling of evolutionary processes. I'm Tom Woodward. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Robert Marks, on Darwin or Design.
With SRN News, I'm Gordon Griffin. Doctors have replaced Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' breathing tube and say she no longer needs a ventilator. Hospital officials say Giffords underwent a procedure this morning to have a tracheotomy tube inserted into her windpipe to protect her airways. Doctors also inserted a feeding tube. Giffords remains in critical condition a week after being shot in Tucson, Arizona. A video shot by the suspected Arizona gunman shows the former community college student touring his campus at night and at times rambling about free speech and the Constitution. Pima Community County officials confirmed the video was the last straw in their decision to suspend Jared Loeffner last September. In the video, Loeffner calls Pima a genocide school. A massive manhunt is underway for a 19-year-old New Jersey man suspected in the killing of a police officer. Jamal Crockham's accused of shooting a Lakewood, New Jersey officer. More details at srnnews.com.
Celebrate the heart and soul of Tampa Bay at the 11th annual Tampa Bay Black Heritage Festival, going on now through the 22nd. Featuring events including Heritage Movie Night at the Tampa Theater, the Heritage Gala at the Tampa Museum and Channel Side, the MLK Step and Dance Contest in Plant City, and January 15th and 16th, the Black Heritage Street Fest in the heart of downtown Tampa at Curtis Hickson Park. On Old School Saturday, it's R&B legend Jeffrey Osborne. On Gospel and Jazz Sunday, Ken Ford. Plus a Battle of the Bands extravaganza, Heritage Spoken Word, Martin Luther King Jr. Parade, USF Lecture Series, and more. The 11th Annual Tampa Bay Black Heritage Festival, celebrating the heart and soul of Tampa Bay. Going on now through the 22nd. Learn more online at TampaBlackHeritage.org. That's TampaBlackHeritage.org.
Welcome back to Darwin or Design, focusing on the debate between intelligent design and Darwinism, with your host, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Welcome back to Darwin or Design, where we are having an utterly illuminating, enlightening, and pretty exhilarating for me talk with one of my friends, a new friend in the field of research on intelligent design and Darwinian theory. He is a professor at Baylor University. He is actually a leading expert in the area of evolutionary informatics. Looking at his website, I believe it's called evoinfo.org, it says, investigating how information makes evolution possible. And of course, we've learned that by that, the more information you supply to a recipe, to an algorithmic search, the more success you have. And that doesn't always happen in nature, according to our understanding of evolutionary theory. Dr. Marks, you have been featured, at least in a short interview, in the movie Expelled. I think many of our listeners listening today in whatever part of the United States are probably, most of them, familiar with Expelled. Some of them have actually seen it more than once. What kind of questions does Ben Stein or do other interviewers bring up in that movie?
Well, the challenge with Expelled, of course, is I put up a website here at Baylor, and I need a disclaimer in front that even though Baylor was put in a poor light in that film, Baylor is an incredible place. We have a new administration, so the administration that did all of this stuff to me has left, and currently I'm allowed to pursue my work in intelligent design. In fact, I take the papers that I co-author with Bill Nemsky, and I put them in my resume to hand in yearly for my annual review, so it's very open. But during the previous administration, there was a terrible disdain for intelligent design. And I had a website up. In fact, it was the Evo Info website, and I had it on the Baylor server, and it was actually shut down. It was actually taken off after I was told to take it off. I retained a lawyer because this wasn't the first time that it had happened, and we started into discussions with Baylor exactly what to do.
Well, I knew that Baylor University also had a center for the study of intelligent design, originally called the Polanyi, named after the Hungarian scholar Michael Polanyi. But it,
yes, which is what Bill Dembski headed up.
Right. And, of course, that, of course, had to be shut down. And that was more of a kind of an unfortunate thing because of a set of emails that went back and forth really after the vindication of that study center came out. And we won't go into that particular, you know, set of events. But I wanted to just say that as I've been reading your work on the Evolution News and Views, the news blog, where articles have come up, probably written by Casey Luskin,
yes,
or others. I just want to just say that it looks like you have spent literally hundreds of hours thinking, analyzing, perhaps running computer simulations to really test what evolutionary scholars are saying about their own simulations. And are you getting any kind of response from the other side? Are they saying this is interesting? Or are they kind of putting stoppers in their ears? What's going on?
It's more of the stoppers in the ears thus far. We have a few responses on blogs, which are unpleasant and typically personal attacks, so
those are
to be ignored. We're waiting for actually something substantive in response. But basically, we have looked at three different algorithms. Of course, the Dawkins-Weisel one, a paper called Evita, which was published in Nature, one of the premier science publications, mm-hmm. which purported to show evolution, and we showed that that was totally cooked up, that it was not the evolutionary process itself that was giving success. Rather, it was the information about the success that was placed in the program. In fact, we showed some other ways of doing it were a lot better than evolution, ways of finding their target, if you will.
And that's called Avida, right?
A-V-I-D-A, yes.
Okay, and it's very, very important because a lot of evolutionary scholars cling to that almost like a life raft, or at least like their super sword. It's like their lightsaber, and you demonstrate that there's no power in that lightsaber.
Yes, and in fact, I believe in the Dover trial, one of the testimonies concerned Evita mm-hmm. as a proof of evolution, and indeed it is not.
Well, hopefully somebody may find this slightly humorous, but Evita, E-V-I-T-A, the musical that came out as a movie some time back with some famous actress.
Yeah, Madonna was in
Madonna
that.
Madonna was in that.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
Well, I like that song, but Evita was the only movie in my memory that I actually looked at my watch about 20 times to see when it would be over. So it sounds like Evita the movie is about as unsuccessful as Evita the program. The AVIDA, of course, we're talking about. That was a kind of a dull thud. That didn't go over too well.
I appreciate it.
At least you'll remember the AVIDA.
That's right.
Avida.
That's right.
Dr. Marks is our guest today. He is on the phone from his office at Baylor University, where he has become a world really respected researcher in the area of evolutionary searches. That is algorithms, computer programs, if you will, that seem to or seek to model what's going on out in nature through the kind of the mutation selection process. Dr. Marks, you've looked into another program, I believe. Is it called EV or EV?
EV, that's correct.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about the origination of EV and what you've found as you've researched that particular model.
Well, let's see. EV was a computer algorithm which was published in 2000, and it also purported to show the power of Darwinian evolution with no prior knowledge about what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And indeed, we showed that, yes, it does have a target, it has a place it's going, it has enormous amounts of information in it to guide it to its success.
Wow. And the fact that it has this pre-programmed information, kind of like hinting what and where to search, is not, in your understanding, really faithfully modeling what's going on in nature with an evolutionary supposed, you know, development in nature. Is that, I mean, I'm just trying to add two and two together here.
Right. Let me just say that there is no workable model of evolution. And one of the things that happens in science is that you eventually have to come up with a model, hopefully some mathematics that support that model, and none exists.
Would this be relevant in connection with what Murray Eden said at the Wistar Institute Symposium back in the mid-60s, Murray Eden being the non-Christian, he was a non-theist, although racially Jewish of origin. Murray Eden said that the standard Darwinian theory, because of the mutation being random, is not going to get you what you need. I mean, has he been kind of a voice in the wilderness earlier on?
Well, I believe he's true. Mutation without the information of what mutation is successful or not successful, mm-hmm. Without some technique to guide the evolution, is going to be totally worthless. In fact, John Sanford and the mystery of the genetic entropy.
And the mystery of the genome, yeah.
I'm sorry?
I believe it's called Genetic Entry and the Mystery of the Genome.
Yes. It talks about mm-hmm. the challenges of mutation and the fact that if we just have random mutations, then the majority of them must be deleterious.
Mm-hmm. Today we're having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Bob Marks. He is on the faculty at Baylor University and is a professor, distinguished professor of computer and electrical engineering. Dr. Marks, I don't know if you've had a chance to see the new edition, the 20th anniversary edition that just came out of Darwin on Trial.
I have not.
Yeah. I just got it in the mail, just very graciously received a gift copy from InterVarsity Press. And the opening essay by none other than Michael Behe is just fantastic. It's worth the price of the book, I believe, just to read his opening 8-page essay. And he says, if I can just read a short quote from this and get your comment, he says, when Darwin on Trial came out, Johnson was discussing mutations as of the early 1990s, and that area of research was mostly speculative. Then he adds this, but since that time, with the newly developed easy ability to sequence DNA, evolution experiments can actually be done in real time in the laboratory. And the exact mutations that give organisms an advantage can be tracked down. What have these experiments shown? And then he talks about the Linsky experiment, Richard Linsky at Michigan State, who has actually caused a colony of E. coli to populate in his lab, going through 50,000 generations, many hundreds of trillions of those specimens of E. coli bacteria. And they have not evolved upward. They have just done a certain kind of evolution. And so when I come back after this quick break, I'm going to ask Dr. Marks to do a quick analysis, because these E. coli bacteria seem to have been blindly looking for improvements. And according to what Michael Behe has said, they were only improving by breaking genes in some cases and throwing away other genes in the alternative cases. And so just as it's sometimes beneficial to throw sophisticated but heavy computers and machinery off a sinking ship, it was beneficial for the bacteria to toss out sophisticated genes that normally were useful. So, Dr. Marks, I'll give you just a couple seconds as we take a break to consider your response. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Thanks for listening to Darwin or Design. I'm Tom Woodward, your host. We'll be right back.
Darwin or Design is brought to you through the sponsorship of the C.S. Lewis Society. Since 1975, communicating the case for Christ and authentic Christianity to those in the academic world, both students and professors. To learn more about the C.S. Lewis Society and to access articles and resources mentioned during Darwin or Design, log on today to apologetics.org. That's apologetics.org. Darwin or Design is also sponsored by Trinity College of Florida. Located on the Gulf Coast, Trinity College has been known for over 75 years for the very best in Christian higher education. Named Best Buy in Private Colleges and Universities in the Continental U.S. by Consumers Digest magazine, Trinity's preparation involves state-of-the-art classroom training, career advancement, and personal support. With alumni serving around the world, Trinity College of Florida is committed to impacting humanity. Experience the Trinity difference. Visit online at trinitycollege.edu.
More hair naturally? That's what you really want. No drugs or plugs, just a full, healthy head of hair. Our new scientific breakthrough handles the multiple causes of thinning hair for both men and women with an intensive four-tier attack. Our exclusive patented program breaks down DHT, the medically recognized cause of hair loss, plus increases scalp circulation, nutrition, and removes environmental chemical buildup. Now your hair can grow naturally, thicker, and fuller. Easy to use, just a few minutes every other day. If your hair loss is within the last 15 years, call now for a free, no-obligation consultation. Call right now. We'll double your order for free up to 1 year. Call 800-245-HAIR. A thicker, fuller, more luscious head of hair again. Call 800-245-HAIR or go to IWantMyHair.com.
That's Kevis at 800-245-HAIR.
Welcome back to Darwin or Design, focusing on the debate between intelligent design and Darwinism, with your host, Dr. Tom Woodward.
Thank you so much for joining us on Darwin or Design, where today we're having a delightful discussion with an expert on computer simulations that parallel evolutionary processes in nature, supposedly at least matching and kind of paralleling what they're doing by the means or the help of a computer algorithm. And to analyze or to test those claims about matching what's happening in a computer with what's happening in nature, we have with us Dr. Bob Marks, who has devoted many years of research to this kind of question. He is the director of a whole evolutionary informatics group, a research group based at Baylor University, which has its own existence on the web at evoinfo.org. That's evoinfo.org. And, of course, we always would encourage you to take a quick trot over to our own website, apologetics.org. That's the website of the C.S. Lewis Society, the main sponsor of our program week to week. Dr. Marks, I right before the break, was reading a quote from the new introduction to Phil Johnson's book, Darwin on Trial, which is now in the 20th anniversary edition. And Dr. Johnson's work, of course, dealt lightly, at least somewhat, with mutations. He has a whole chapter devoted to that issue. But Michael Behe, the biologist at Lehigh University, came in on this intro and said, well, since Johnson wrote this book, Dr. Linsky, another biologist in the Midwest, has done a programmed series of tests over 20 years on a colony of E. coli bacteria he's grown in his lab and literally gone through, I think, 20,000 or more generations. It's incredible what he has done. But in following what has happened, the only evolution as these guys, these critters, became maybe a little bit more streamlined and a little bit faster growing, more rapidly reproducing, in terms of actual information content, they appear to have not added a single gene. They've just mutated some kind of medium sophisticated genes to either break them or throw them out entirely. Does that match what does Linsky's work match what you're finding in analyzing these simulations?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, Linsky was the first author on the Aveda paper.
So really?
He was also, he was involved in the computer simulation also, probably the biologist. But let me just give a little background. I'm an engineer,
okay.
And engineers are very, very different than scientists in the way that we look at the world. Science packages theory and kind of places it on a throne and honors and protects it like a queen, and engineers make the queen come down from the throne and scrub the floor, and if she doesn't work, we fire her. We're more interested in the pragmatic applications and whether things work or not. Insofar as what Behe is describing, I think this probably falls within the area of so-called microevolution.
Mm-hmm.
And as an engineer, I see microevolution, as I understand it, as adaptive. And characteristic of a good design is the ability to adapt to different environments. And so when I hear of these things, such as losing functionality in the E. coli or the Galapagos finches growing different sorts of beaks, I think, wow, what an incredible design to have such an adaptive system, to be able to adapt to variations in the environment and such. In terms of the information content, yes, it certainly seems that there is no in the Linsky experiment that, from what I understand, that there is no increase in information content to the E. coli. It's loss of functionality.
Right. And, of course, that's exactly what Michael Behe says in this introduction to Philip Johnson's 20th anniversary version of Darwin on Trial. Let me do a plug for this book. If you wanted to get a copy of Darwin on Trial, the new 20th anniversary edition, just visit our website, apologetics.org. This new, incredibly and powerful edition of a great, great book, which is as current now as ever, is our featured book of the month. The 20th anniversary edition of Darwin on Trial, featuring this incredible, very, very wonderful and well-written essay at the beginning of the book by Michael Behe, just off, hot off the press. And Behe basically says, again, in other words, these broken or thrown away genes are maybe beneficial, just as it's beneficial to throw sophisticated but heavy computers and machinery off a sinking ship. And then he says that this whole process actually made the mutant bacteria grow faster than their relatives, but it hardly answers the question of where sophisticated genes come from in the first place. And then he adds, in the end, after 50,000 generations, not only did a new kind of organism not evolve, but rather the original organism was degraded. And as he adds again at the end of the paragraph, this is currently our best evidence of what random mutation is capable of. Most mutations are harmful, and the few that are beneficial break genes. So, Dr. Bob Marks, as you talked about the flexibility that's built into the biological system, you were talking about the flexibility of adaptability. That doesn't really mean that as it's adapting, it's adding genetic information. It's just rejuggling or reprocessing existing information. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. Or in the case of the E. coli losing information, William Dembski debated Christopher Hitchens about a month ago, and one of the things Christopher Hitchens mentioned were these salamanders in caves that lost their eyeballs, and purporting that that was some sort of evidence of evolution. But indeed, it's exactly the same thing with the E. coli. It lost the functionality because it didn't need it. The information was there and went away. And change does not mean increase in information.
But you would think that anybody who has their mental faculties up and running and smoothly, you know, sharply, skeptically functioning would see that. I'm wondering why Christopher Hitchens or even Linsky, who participated, I guess, in the Evita simulation, why they do not see that. Is there some philosophy or ideology involved here?
I wouldn't even begin to guess, Tom. I would suppose it would be ideologically driven, that they have a conclusion that they need to support, and they want to bend the evidence no matter what it is to support that evidence.
Well, we've been enjoying a fantastic conversation today with one of the United States, really one of the world's leading experts in testing and critically analyzing those simulations, those algorithms that have been published by evolutionary simulators, if I can call them that, such as EV or EV, and such as Evita, also the Richard Dawkins simulation, which I don't know. Does it have a name? Methinks it is like a weasel. Is that the name of it?
Well, on our website, we call it Weaselware.
Okay, Weaselware.
And in fact, if you go to EvoInfo, we do have simulations of Evita, EV, and the Weaselware, written by my graduate students, Winston Ewart and George Montanez.
Wow. Well, we have been enjoying this conversation greatly. If you want to actually see the interview with Dr. Bob Marks, it is on the first half of the movie Expelled, where Ben Stein goes around interviewing different researchers, scientists, and philosophers who are affiliated in one way or another with intelligent design as a scientific research community. Is there any final parting words of encouragement or wisdom or any recommendations for reading or watching that you want to give?
That I would like to give?
Yeah, sure. Put you on the spot here.
I don't watch Expelled.
Okay.
And go to our website and read all of our papers.
Very good.
That and UHF.
Yeah, now that's on my list to see.
Yankovic, yeah.
And what's the website again? One more time.
Mm-hmm. EvoInfo.org, EvoInfo.org.
EvoInfo.org. And I added that you can also see great summaries of his work at EvolutionNews.org, EvolutionNews.org, which is the kind of the news blog of the Discovery Institute. Well, Dr. Bob Marks, best to you in the year 2011. Have a great semester out there at Baylor University.
Thank you, Tom. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that certainly was a delightful tour of a kind of a land in academia that I don't think I've ever visited. How about you, Bill? That's new information for you.
Definitely. And I always like when we have the mathematicians and the engineer types on the program, because they do have a way of looking at this that's just very black and white. And if the numbers don't crunch, then it doesn't work.
That's right.
And what he's telling us is when it comes to evolution, the numbers don't crunch.
They don't crunch because the simulations, these computer simulations that have been put out there by evolutionary theorists who dabble in computers, just don't, as it were, meet the criteria of finding new information without a little help. You know, I always sometimes play a game with my grandkids. You know, you're getting warmer, now you're getting colder. And so if I'm guiding them into the room, and if I want them to find some little hidden object, they love it if I tell them they're warmer or colder.
Right.
Because
right.
That gets them there. I mean, if they just keep listening to me, but that's the supplying of additional information. If I were to put them completely in a blind search, I mean, especially if it's a big territory,
right,
they don't know where to start. And what these simulations that are supposedly modeling evolution are doing is they're basically providing a part of that algorithm that says, you're getting warmer, you're getting colder. And that doesn't count. So I want to just bring out real quickly, Bill, tell you a story that when I was following a big evolutionary conference that took place up at Florida State. I mean, this is just north of us, a couple, five or six hours.
Right.
They had about six scholars come from around the United States to lay out the case for evolution. And it was supposed to be a coverage of intelligent design versus evolution. Guess how many evolutionary theorists, I mean, excuse me, how many intelligent design theorists they had?
None.
You're right. And I thought, oh, that's a little bit lopsided, isn't it?
Right.
And so then as I read the accounts, this is where it ties in with Bob Marks, our guest today. I was listening to the accounts, and actually it was transcribed on the internet, and they had Q&A, Robert Pennock, who wrote The Tower of Babel, a book which attacks me in my writings personally and distorts them. He also wrote several other books attacking intelligent design. He's a professor up in, I think, Michigan State now. So Robert Pennock comes, and he actually takes this question from the floor. And the questioner says, is it not true that Darwinian theory has a problem with the random mutation aspect because it's a blind search for new information, and if you keep waiting for random mutations to line up all the DNA code, you know, you may get a letter here, a letter there, but hundreds of letters lined up in this long sequence, a string of code that goes on for, you know, literally miles, if you put it in human terms. And you know what his answer was? Just check out the web and look up Evita. We've simulated this on using computers, and trust us, it happens. He was relying on a computer simulation to answer the real-life problem of Darwinian theory. So now, come back to what Bob Marks was saying, you know, in our interview. He says that when you test these theories, they fail. They literally collide with the no-free lunch theorem. They cannot find the goal. They're blind searches.
Right.
They rely on information. Well, we all rely on information at times in our life, and I think the most important information that you and I could ever rely on comes from the Creator. We're so excited that we can be representing this Christian point of view each week on the program. And if you have questions about the possibility that maybe there is a Creator after all, you've been told that no, there isn't, you know, nature did it, we would love to hear from you. Our webpage, of course, is apologetics.org. You can always reach me by just sending me a quick note at information, spell out the whole word, information, at apologetics.org. And we'd love to talk to you about the Creator, who is known in the New Testament as the Word who made the world, the Word who is one of us now, who became incarnate in Christ, and of course is the King of the universe, the King of creation. And His name, of course, is known to us through Scripture. I'm Dr. Tom Woodward. Thank you so much for joining us on Darwin or Design. Look forward to seeing you back here next week.
Pastor Danny Hodges, Calvary Chapel of St. Petersburg.
The time of ministry, when it's a season of rejection, what are you going to do? Well, I'll tell you what, you keep going back. Keep being gracious, and you keep being merciful, and you keep calling, and you keep praying for them.
Local pastors with teaching you trust. AM 570 and 910 WTBN.
Top dentists like Dr. Tom Clement of Clement Family Dental Care send their patients to Amley and Amley Orthodontics.
Amley and Amley and their team treat our patients with respect and compassion. They're very caring. They go the extra mile. When it comes to our patients, we trust Amley and Amley Orthodontics.
Amley and Amley Orthodontics in St. Petersburg. Call 727-381-1062. That's 727-381-1062. Online at amley-amley.com.